This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for December 29th, 2005. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. In agricultural news, the Port of New Orleans is operating at 50% efficiency 4 months after Hurricane Katrina. Also, new FDA labeling requirements begin on January 1st, and new health benefits for barley. I'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, a commentary from the Farm Bureau, and Don Day will be by with a look at agricultural weather. It's your Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
On Thursday afternoon, prices settled like this. March wheat at Kansas City at 385 and a quarter, down 5. March wheat at Chicago, 337 and a quarter, down 8 and a quarter. May, 347 and a quarter, down 7. March corn, 211, down 5 and a quarter. May, 220, down 5. July, 228 and a half, down 4 and a half. September, 236, down 4. January soybeans, 598 and a half, down 12 and a half. March, 607 and a half, down 14 and three quarters. July, 627, down 9 and a half. November, 624 and a half, down 10 and three quarters. January soybean meal at 198, down 440. January soybean oil, 2090, and that was up 6. On the Merck, January feeder cattle, 114.72 and a half, down 27 and a half. December live cattle, 94.90, down 32 and a half. February lean hogs, 65.02 and a half, down 10 on the day. Joining us on the telephone to talk about the markets is Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Pete.
Good afternoon, Dave.
And thank you for filling in today for Dan Zwicker. We tried to jingle him up down in Texas, and we just got a voicemail from him. So we'll go ahead and talk to you and find out what happened today in the markets. It does look like it was definitely a downtrend kind of day. In fact, if you look at the soybean charts on daily charts, today's action actually pierced the uptrend today. What kind of damage did we see?
Well, we'll need follow-through tomorrow or next week on it to prove that to be. But, yeah, we did go through the uptrend numbers. We needed to hold March between 610 and 614 to not put it into a downtrend. But, again, you have to have another day afterwards of that same type of activity. But we had funds stopped buying, and once they stopped buying early in the day, there was nothing there to hold it, and we just gradually went on down.
I guess a reason fundamentally was that we see a difference in the forecast in Argentina?
Correct. Wetter forecast there. Also talk of USDA raising yields and lowering exports, thus lowering or less raising carryout here in the U.S. on corn and beans. And those more moisture in Argentina and more moisture in southern Brazil, all of that helped pushing things downward.
In the corn pit, a similar kind of story. We were trying to get that corn on the March contract on a daily chart up above the 100-day moving average, that at around 217 and a quarter thereabouts, 216 and three quarters, I believe, at the start of today. Couldn't get there yesterday, and we bounced off that. And actually, with the lower close today, finished up below the downtrend line here, too.
That's correct. And again, once we went below that, there was nothing to hold it, and we just continued to stay below it. The funds that had been buying pretty much didn't buy after the first hour, and there was no one in to buy it. And once we pierce those levels, some other people then getting out on stops, and also people just getting out of the market that had bought recently, taking their profits before the end of the year.
It looks like also that we're headed for the 20-day moving average to actually cross the 50-day moving average at some point in the near future. I suppose that would also be a signal sending bulls scurrying.
Right. When you get those technical lines crossing each other, that changes the trend and says, yep, we're now in a downtrend. And we need a couple more days of down movement to you know, show that this was what it was today. If we would bounce up tomorrow or Monday, we'd forget that and start talking about some other technical signs.
In the wheat pit, it held up better than in the corn and the soy, at least from a technical standpoint, it looks like.
From a technical standpoint, yes, but we're still down 7 to 8, and we did get up to places that we wanted to reach in the 355 area in the May, the 365 area in the July this last week, and we touched, I think we might have touched at 350 yesterday or close to it in the front month. So we got up to places we had had as goals. Now we've backed off. Will the technical people, what will they look at tomorrow? And if we can go through some technical points, they'll say we're turning down there. But we still have uptrend in wheat. In fact, we don't know what the acres are. We don't know what the weather's going to do to the wheat here. And worldwide, the wheat is in a fairly tight supply.
And wasn't there a gap up around, what, 355-ish on the March chart in the wheat?
I believe it was right up at that area, yeah.
Do we still have that in play at this point, do you think?
I think we do, as long as we don't go cross back down the technical areas the next set's down. And I think it'll be more of a back-and-forth move than will the corner of the beans.
What was the features over at the Merck today?
The Merck today, The cattle were just back and forth, closed down a little bit, really nothing much of anything going on there. We did bounce off of lows down 50 to 60, but still closed a little lower. Not really much happening there. A signal that, some more of the Asian countries are going to allow our beef in, but we knew that was coming, so it didn't really have much effect. Looking for a little bit of tighter supplies down the road further. So we're still looking for the cattle to hold fairly well.
And in the lean hogs?
In the lean hogs, we were up today. The mentality there is to buy breaks. The hog and pig report yesterday wasn't really anything to push it lower. And in fact, was maybe a hair friendly that we didn't have quite as many sows out there placed as we thought we might have.
So what are producers who call you talking about today?
Today they were talking about, should have we sold cash? Where should we sell cash? Can I replace cash now that it's going back down? Those type of things. Of where am I at? What should I be doing? And, you know, if I'm totally sold out, should I wait to buy back? If I haven't sold any, should I start selling? You know, those type of questions.
And for the record, where is Bates officially on its cash sales?
Oh, boy. I'd have to look at my sheets, but I think they're fairly high for this year, and we've begun 2006.
So some hedging at levels of what, last week?
Well, we hit 248, 249, 50 on corn this week, December, and we hit 640 in the November beans. So those were places to start hedging some of the new crop. Old crop, we've been trying to catch up if we hadn't made sales in the last 10 days.
Thank you very much, Pete.
Thanks.
Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And again, we thank him for filling in today for Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor. At the bottom of the hour, we'll take a look at agricultural weather with Don Day of Acra Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. This evening's forecast, according to Scott Olthoff, calls for cloudy skies with lows ranging from 28 to 32 degrees. And then tomorrow, in northern sections, cloudy with light rain and snow moving in. In central and southern sections, cloudy with light rain moving in. And highs ranging from 36 degrees in the north to near 50 degrees in the south. In agricultural news, 4 months after Hurricane Katrina shut down the port of New Orleans, officials say the port is still running at just half its capacity. Disruptions in the river transportation system after Hurricane Katrina forced basis levels sky high and cash prices to producers sharply lower at harvest. National Corn Growers Association Director of Public Policy Lisa Kelly says NCGA had expected the Port of New Orleans to be nearly fully functional by now.
Well, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. It was probably next to impossible to estimate exactly when the port would be back up to 100%. And I think we were probably overly optimistic in our estimates, but we're continuing to move forward and hopeful that the port can get back up and running.
Kelly says some in the industry were predicting 80% service by now, but she says some of those predictions were made before it became clear that 30% of the port had been destroyed.
That is a very significant number. Initial reports were that just one facility, which was the lowest facility along the river, was damaged, and it looks like we're now learning that there's greater damage and need for more extensive repairs.
In a recent interview, a top Port of New Orleans official put damage to the port at about $100 million. Some of the $29 billion in Katrina-related aid Congress passed last week as part of the defense bill will go toward making those repairs. A spokesperson with the Food and Drug Administration says it's preparing to analyze 780 public comments for reaching a final decision on its proposed new restrictions on animal feed. The spokesperson says complexity of the comments could cause the agency to take a few months to digest the information. FDA officials proposed new measures in October to tighten controls on the 1997 ruminant-to-ruminant feed ban by removing high-risk cattle materials from all animal feed. Highlights of the rules include a measure prohibiting animal feed to contain brains and spinal cords from cattle over 30 months of age. The same materials would be banned if they came from younger cattle not approved for human consumption. Meanwhile, the National Barley Foods Council is trumpeting a recent FDA report on the health benefits of barley fiber. Steve Edwardson is executive director for the North Dakota Barley Council, one of five state barley producer groups that make up the National Council.
We've known scientifically for quite some time that the beta-glucans within barley are very beneficial in managing coronary heart disease. And achieving a FDA label to allow that claim to be stated on the food product certainly helps out the marketing.
Most of the barley grown in this country is used for livestock feed or for the brewing industry. Edwardson says the real benefit from the new FDA-approved health claim may come from the export market, because not much barley is used domestically as a food grain.
In the U.S., it's been running in that area of about 2 to 5% of production, so it hasn't been terribly large, but even that's a relatively significant portion. Where I think we'll see market gains are going to be in probably Japan and Taiwan, that have been looking at this label release for quite some time and are quite excited about it, because health foods over there are of great market interest.
And the FDA says a host of changes for food labels go into effect on January 1st. Among them, requirements that 8 major allergens and the amount of trans fat in a product must be disclosed. The FDA is also considering other changes, including giving calories more prominence on the food label by increasing the type size of the calorie listing, and requiring that nutrition information be spelled out for an entire package, not just for servings. Hong Kong said today it has partially lifted a ban on U.S. beef imports that became effective 2 years ago. Hong Kong will accept U.S. boneless beef from cattle less than 30 months of age and with high-risk materials removed. The government said in a statement that it was satisfied with the U.S. measures against mad cow disease. Meanwhile, Japan's agriculture minister said today that consumers should make up their own minds about whether to eat beef from the U.S. now that a 2-year-long ban over mad cow concerns has been lifted. U.S. beef returned to Japanese supermarket shelves on Monday, 2 weeks after the ban was lifted. But it remains to be seen whether consumers will overcome their fears that the meat is infected with the disease. The director of public and investor relations for Illinois-based CF Industries says the recent price drop in natural gas prices is no guarantee that fertilizer prices will be lower in the spring. Warmer temperatures have prompted lower prices for natural gas futures. Tuesday saw a 10% drop in prices, which makes a 23% drop since last week. Prices are trading at their lowest levels since mid-September. China's Ministry of Commerce says the value of Chinese agricultural exports is expected to reach $26.5 billion this year, a historical high. Agricultural exports in the first 11 months were valued at $24.37 billion, up 19% on the year. Meanwhile, the trade deficit for agricultural products during the period narrowed to $1.53 billion, almost down 72% on the year. The ministry did not provide reasons for the changes in the figures, but the nation's official newspaper is reporting today that China will likely face a shortage of grains next year, as demand is expected to exceed output by 15 million metric tons. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
In today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Roachkiss says the organization has a new map for producer success.
As we wrap up 2005 and spring into the new year, it is only fitting that we talk about the future of agriculture. Farm Bureau has never been an organization to sit on its hands and dwell on the past. Instead, we grab the bull by the horns and take charge of our destination. 2 years ago, the American Farm Bureau Federation Board appointed a committee to look at where American agriculture should be in the year 2019. That is the 100th anniversary of Farm Bureau, and to develop recommendations to make the sector productive and profitable with options to help farmers transition into the future. Making American Agriculture Productive and Profitable, or MAP, is the name of the committee that spent several years looking into the future of agriculture and recently presented its findings. The MAP committee, which consisted of a broad range of producers from across the country, truly epitomized the depth and breadth of American agriculture. A change the committee found was that global trade will be the key driver for future agricultural profitability, as 96% of the world's population lives outside of the U.S. borders. In addition, environmental issues will shift more toward market-driven actions that are used to achieve environmental benefits, and agricultural marketing goals will shift as farmers learn to produce what they can sell and not simply what they can produce. The most important and driving conclusion reached by the committee is government support for agriculture will look very different in 2019 because of domestic budget pressures and international trade agreements. The current U.S. farm program has already been successfully challenged in the World Trade Organization. The committee made several fundamental recommendations to help weather the storm. Committee members agreed the U.S. should resist internal and external calls for unilateral disarmament in regard to our government support for agriculture. Reductions in commodity program support should only occur with the addition of market access by other countries. Another important recommendation is that funds must be kept in rural America instead of siphoning them off to other non-rural areas of government spending. Further, agriculture needs to take control of its own environmental destiny. Farmers need to proactively educate consumers about their environmental contributions and change their adversarial relationships with pragmatic conservation groups to that of allies and eventually clients. As the committee admits, there are no guarantees, but by studying likely future scenarios, we will be better prepared to deal with them when the time comes. This is Amy Roachkiss with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Roachkiss's comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bill.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, the board sure did take it on the chin today, broke downtrend lines in all three grain commodities, wheat, corn, and soybeans. And the question that I have for you is, did producers do a lot of selling in the last week to 10 days? Yes or no? And if no, what might basis do? And if yes, what might basis do?
Well, I think that's still an unanswered question, but obviously there was a good amount of cash movement over the last week here as corn got, especially the last couple of days when corn in many locations, at least in Illinois, got up above that magical $2 number on the January bid. I think that bought a lot of corn. A lot of that was done yesterday. So what we saw today probably wasn't unexpected totally. The cash movement kept the lid kind of on the bases from improving, but as we've dropped the futures price here, I think your bases could see some improvement again as we go over the next week to 10 days, assuming that cash movement slows down and the farmers aren't forced to sell just to get cash flow, which nobody really knows the answer to that question right now.
I suppose that there might be another burst of farmers selling if March might manage to find its way above 220, say.
Oh, yeah. I think that there, you know, the obvious two levels there are $2 just in the price, and then a net $2 after the minimum storage payments, which run typically 12 to 15 or 16 cents a bushel. You know, if a farmer could net out $2 after he paid that storage, I think that would definitely be a level which would be attractive and probably has some offers in there.
So what did producers talk to you about today who called?
Well, I guess mostly what we were doing was trying to finish up some sales we were making here and you know, had some offers in from yesterday and that. Really just kind of looking down the road as far as the on-farm corn and you know, how we go about trying to lift hedges on that and take advantage of the basis levels.
And what about your prices today, Bill?
Cash corn is $1.92, and beans are at $5.78.
Anything that you would like to add?
Well, I might just mention, I ran into this in a couple instances here this week. If you've got corn contracted for January and for some reason you didn't take your LDP, you might keep an eye here and maybe keep that contract open so that you can still LDP that corn. With a day like this, that LDP should make some move back to the higher side, give you a chance maybe to get something out of it.
Thank you much, Bill.
Okay.
Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. I'll be back in just about 2 minutes with a look at agricultural weather.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Former State Representative Gerald Bradley of Bloomington died yesterday at a local hospital. Bradley represented the 44th District in the Illinois House from 1969 until 1982. He was House Majority Whip for several years. McLean County Democratic Party Chairman John Penn says Bradley was good at getting Democrats and Republicans to agree on issues. And his son Michael Bradley says he was a selfless man who often put the needs of others before his own. Village officials in St. Joseph think their town's population has grown since the 2000 U.S. Census listed them as having just over 2,900 people. So the Champaign County Village is conducting a special census. Trained census takers are expected to finish their work in a few weeks. And Mayor B.J. Hackler says he expects they'll find several hundred additional people in St. Joseph. He says a higher census count will mean more motor fuel tax and income tax money for the village. A campaign against illegally parking and disability parking spots in Illinois has netted dozens of offenders in the past month. Officials with the Secretary of State's office fanned out shopping malls over the Christmas shopping season to find people misusing parking spots reserved for people with handicapped tags or licenses. The campaign also publicizes the fact that fines for illegal use of disability parking spots will jump to $500 on New Year's Day. A feud over the appropriate decor for the Indiana governor's residence has led to the cancellation of a charity interior decorating event. About 50 designers who volunteered to decorate the remodeled residence complained about the level of control state officials were exercising. University of Illinois police say they confiscated 10 bogus tickets at last night's Illinois Southeast Missouri basketball game at the Assembly Hall in Champaign. U of I Sports Information Director Kent Brown says the tickets were for seats that didn't exist. The fans did get to see last night's game, but Brown says in the future, anyone with a bogus ticket will be escorted from the arena. U of I police investigators are trying to identify who sold the fake tickets. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson and Morris at 815-941-3758. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is Don Day of AgriWeather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon.
And thank you for subbing today for Peter Levitt, who is away. Brazil and Argentina going to get a little wetter. At least that's what the runs seem to indicate, and that's what traders were indicating today, especially in that soybean pit, which really had double-digit losses, and the reason, the weather. What can you tell us?
Well, they're definitely correct. More rain is on the way, and the only negative down in South America, in Brazil and Argentina, would be the fact that temperatures are still going to be averaging a little bit below normal. They've been cool lately. That trend will continue, but that is to be expected when it's a little bit wet. So right now, unless we continue to see soggy conditions and below normal temperatures go on a little bit longer, it looks like the moist conditions will continue in those areas.
So help for southern Mato Grosso do Sul, western Paraná, southeastern Paraguay, those kind of places?
Exactly. Really, all of South America, especially the key areas of Brazil and Argentina, and in those central countries, are going to have a favorable weather pattern when it comes to the moisture.
And will that be enough to recharge soil conditions where we've been talking dryness?
Well, I think there will be in some spots. Brazil has been the wettest of all the areas so far this season, and that trend will continue. Now, there are some pockets of Argentina that are going to need more rain to catch up, but this certainly gets them on the road to recovery.
Here in the Midwest, a series of small weather disturbances have been producing some rain this week. Is that going to continue?
It will. In fact, through the first full 10 days of the new year, we're going to continue to see weather systems come off the West Coast, race across the Rockies and across the Midwest, the Great Lakes, the Corn Belt, and into the Ohio Valley, then into the Appalachians. This pattern, for at least another week, will continue. Unfortunately, that's more bad news for Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas, where the drought in those areas, at least for another week to 10 days, is going to hang on.
How have we been doing in terms of recharging soil conditions, especially here in Illinois, particularly northern Illinois, which was the focus of the drought over the summer?
Well, the latest drought figures show that only modest gains have been made by recharging that soil moisture. If we continue this trend, and we should for another week, we'll continue to make modest gains, but we're probably a couple of real big storms away before we put a real big dent in it.
And before I let you go, a quick week comment. Are we going to see some net drying in the U.S. hard red wheat areas?
It looks that way, especially as we get into next week. But some moisture in those areas before this week and the weekend is through.
Thank you very much, Don.
Thank you.
And that's today's Closing Market Report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 Central Time for our first look at the weather. as well as remember that you can listen to today's futures analysis, cash grain analysis, and weather reports on the World Wide Web. Go to WILL.UIUC.edu, click on the left-hand side of the page on AM, and then the right-hand side of the page on agriculture, and you can page on down, and there will be in the radio on demand section everything you need to see regarding AM 580 agriculture. This is Dave Dickey. Thanks for listening.